Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are just trying to figure it out as they make their way through life and comedy and everything in between. My name is Matt Alano Martin. With me, as always, is Dwight Simmons. Dwight, how are we feeling, man? How are you doing?
I'm good. I did a lot of figuring it out this weekend in St. Louis for the Flyover Comedy Festival.
All right.
At least attempted to. First off, it's November, and it was, you know, a nice balmy weekend, just like Granddad used to have them in late November. And so, like, I don't know, you've been to St. Louis a bunch.
I have been to St. Louis a bunch for various other things, but comedically, it's one of the markets that I have never really gotten a foothold in. Yeah. Like I was thinking about this the other day when I was seeing all your posts from the festival and other people that we knew were at the festival. I think I've only ever done 3 shows there, and really, like, one of those was opening for Brother Ali. Mm-hmm. So I was doing comedy at a hip hop show. So it wasn't like the comedy crew there accepted me. You know, one was like a proper show at the Heavy Anchor. Mm-hmm. And then one was, I was able to close out like a mic and that they threw me some cash as I was running through. But yeah, for whatever reason, St. Louis is very close to where we live, just a few hours away, but I've never had much luck getting in there. So I don't know much about the St. Louis comedy scene, as opposed to you, who have been there a few times and just got a massive crash course in it by being thrown into their big ass comedy festival that they have.
It is very big. They make everyone feel like a rock star. It's a little validating. It's like one of those festivals where you're like, okay, every show I go to is legit, and like, people are doing actual shit with their comedy careers. It's not like, hey, let's go have fun with a comedy festival for a weekend. It's kind of high stakesy, you know what I mean? Just because of industry presence, I think, and also because of quality of show. I think this festival has a massive budget. I'm just from running a festival for a couple of years and seeing what goes into that expense wise and what they're able to do.
Yeah,
I'm like asking every producer, like, hey, man, who you working for?
How y'all paying?
Like, we all got hotel rooms.
Yeah.
Like, at 10,000 Lives, we get hotel rooms, but we got our own hotel rooms for
the weekend. Your own hotel room.
Yeah.
That's unheard of with the comedy festival. Usually
outrageous.
If they provide it, which is not very many festivals do, you still have to share it with some other rando comic on the festival. So, man, yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I do know that they have deep pockets, you know, from doing some investigation too, because, like, you know, they have really, really big headliners. Like, last year they had Sarah Silverman.
Yep.
And a little transparency for everybody not in the booking side of things, everything. Sarah Silverman's about $100,000 usually. Mm-hmm. That's about her going rate, is in that ballpark. And so that was just one headline. Yeah. So right there, you're talking like twice the booking budget, the talent budget for Limestone on one person. So yeah, they definitely have some deep ass pockets. St. Louis, of course, is a major city, big population base, so they can, hopefully they're not bleeding money. Hopefully this isn't just like a giant tax write-off for one of the sponsors.
I don't think so, because like their sponsors were at the show, like, and they're just very well-dressed, kind of corporate looking. It's like, oh, you must be one of the sponsors. They're wearing their lanyards very proudly.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Just like prominent.
Like,
prominent.
I'm important.
Yeah.
I'm important.
It's like they had it dry clean so it fit perfectly. Mm-hmm. All of ours spin around.
Yes, exactly.
Like, theirs were like perfect. But it was really cool, man. I thought it was very comic facing, which is nice. They did an industry panel, which I found great value in, which is not always the case with a lot of industry panels. When I talk about industry, I mean people that book stuff on a local, regional level to a national level, like a Netflix booker was there. And then like Melissa Hahn, who books model face comedy in Asheville, was there, along with, she books like a bunch of stuff. And then a bunch of people, like, you know, managers, the new creative director, executive director of JFL was there, new faces. Mm-hmm. So the panel was relevant to people or comics at our level, which I found very useful, because everyone's kind of asking these very relevant questions. And I thought they gave really honest answers. It wasn't just, hey, bucko, just put your head down, keep trying, or move to a coast, which is what we get a lot. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially, you know, we on this podcast talk about social media a lot. And obviously, a lot of comics have questions about what to do with social media, mm-hmm. what matters, what doesn't matter, what people are looking for. So it was a wide ranging conversation, but I think it was useful. And if you guys subscribe to our Patreon, I will give you the full recording of it.
There you go. Yeah. This might be the time we actually launch a Patreon, because normally we tease that as a way to find out what shit we've been talking, the names that we're not naming, but this is would actually probably get a few people to sign up.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Tune in for the industry member that we didn't like to stay on brand.
Well, that's really amazing. Is there one specific sort of like kernel of knowledge from that panel that you can just kind of share quickly with our like a little teaser for the Patreon?
Yeah. So there are two specific ones.
Okay.
One's more technical. Actually, I'll do a 1A and 1B that kind of goes together. So I asked about something that we talk about on the podcast a lot, which is initial contact or reaching out, sending an email. Mm-hmm. And they spent a lot of time on this, just because these people get wild emails. Like, we talk about it all the time. Like, like Melissa was talking about how a person will hit her up on email and then they'll Instagram message her the same day and then send a Facebook message. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of them were like, if you just look hard enough, it's all on our websites, like submission, mm-hmm. how to send an email, or if you're getting referenced by someone, which, you know, that's higher level, say like JFL or, mm-hmm. you know, the Netflix booker, treat them like a person. Don't just do the copy and paste, know, hey, I would love to come work your club, which, mm-hmm. you know, I fall into that trap. If I'm sending out booking avails, I don't really have a relationship and I just need mm-hmm. to send like 100 emails, I fall in that trap. But I think it's, you know, it's more effective to slow down and maybe put more thoughts into each individual email, even though a lot of times,
100%, yeah,
a lot of times they're not going to be returned, but that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, you're not on the radar. It's just, you know, they have so much volume to get through.
Right. Yeah. If I can just add something to that real quick before you continue on, you know, the copy and paste, you know, because you kind of come up with your tight pitch, right? Mm-hmm. Like real quickly, like, hey, this is who I am. These are my credits, like attached as a link to my clip, you know, here, blow my veils. Like, of course, you're going to kind of use that over and over again. But what I do is I always have a place in there where I work in the name of the actual club. The person's, you know, the person's name. And yes, I cut and paste and then I go in and I change that, you know, to be accurate. Now, again, you run the risk then of sending someone the wrong shit. Like it says the wrong club's name in it if you are in too much of a hurry.
Yeah.
But yes, so 100% slowing down, taking time to actually craft those messages or at least personalize your stock message.
Right.
I think is very important. And we've talked about on this podcast too, is like, what clip you send, you should have different types of clips to send for different types of places, you know? And so, you know, if you only have one gear, you only have one thing, you're already just a squeaky clean comic. You don't have a dirty set, you know, or whatever. So yeah. Okay. Just send that one set, that one link. But, you know, we've talked about targeting, like, okay, this is maybe a rural one-nighter, more conservative type place. I'm not going to send my hard left set you know, to them. But yeah, I 100% like you can still, I don't want to say cheat, but you could still speed up the process by having a stock sort of letter that you send, but take the time to personalize it. 100% take the time to personalize it for sure.
Definitely.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead
to piggyback off of that, what you're just saying is the part B of this is Dan from 800 Pound Gorilla was saying that, you know, it's It's something that I've said is if you make the booker's job as easy as possible, they're more likely to respond to you. Something that I've never heard before, though, is like he likes an email structured as like an introduction and just like a quick bio instead of like a copy and pasted bio. Mm-hmm. And then he likes, okay, so here's a 5-minute clip, here's a 30-minute clip, and here's a clean clip. Mm. You know what I mean? So if yeah. he likes that 5-minute clip, he can come he'll right back the to the email without like typing your name into YouTube. Right. I thought that was really fascinating just to have, you know, just to have that clean clip or a different type of clip in your in your email, just so they know that you do have that different gear. And if they want to see more, it's available there for them. So
I think that's very smart. And I used to do something, and I guess I still would do this. If I'm submitting to a club to feature or headline, so I'm asking for 30 minutes or an hour at your club and I've never been there before, I will usually send a link to a short 5-minute, like here's a short sample clip. And then here's a full length set. Here's me. Here's my album recording from the Comedy Fort. Yep. So I will do that. I've never put the third like clean clip in there. But that's a great note for sure.
I never have either. And that's because I do not have one, Matt. So we're working on it.
You do. It's just 40 seconds long.
It's an introduction reel.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was really helpful because a lot of people get in their head about, all right, I have a very low return rate on what I'm sending out, which is just normal. So, you know, they practice patience, but in a way that was like, hey, make yourself stand out, put in the subject line what you are actually, what the subject of the email is. Here's a concept. So many people will just be like, hey, they're just like, I want to work your club, or they'll just put the name of the club in the subject. It's like, put your name in there, man. Like,
Yeah, definitely. And again, going back to the thing about making sure that you are personalizing it and not just sending something that clearly you cut and paste. You know, one time we at Limestone received someone's submission clip, you know, and when you clicked on the link, the name of the YouTube video was their submission for Skankfest. It's like Skankfest 2023 submission video. And we don't care if you're submitting to other festivals.
No.
Like, but why are you putting a specific festival's name on there anyway? It should just be 2023 submission bid clip, you know, submission set, something like that. Something. So, but I was just like, well, that doesn't make us feel special and pretty, you know, like when you do that, you know.
Not watching this shit.
Yeah. I mean, we still sent it to the panel. They still watched it. They still voted on it. But it was just like not a good first foot forward for sure.
Yeah. Like you're taking the time. Just do it right. I think it's that's the business aspect of this that is lost on comics a lot. It's just like focus for a second. Like if that means you can't send out as many emails that day, then quality over quantity.
Yes. You know? You're going to definitely increase your chances of getting return on those emails. And then also this is something that I don't think I talked about after that show, but the Kyle Kinane theater show that I did a couple of weeks ago that I featured on, those are booked by a guy named Ben Conowitz, who was one of the original owners of The Drop. And then he was more of an improv guy though. So he kind of like phased out of doing standup, just started doing these more benefit type shows, booking like benefit things for his community. Cause he loves the town of La Porte where he grew up and where he still lives. He backstage, you know, I'd worked for him before. I've headlined that benefit show before back in the day. And I've known Ben for a long time. And he just like took a moment to say, hey, you were one of the first comics when we were running The Drop who treated it like a job and was professional and would send like a follow-up thank you email after you did your week and just say like, you know, I had a great time, or just like, hey, here's my avails for this next year. You know, like just treated it like he's like regularly you would come to us, you know, not bugging us, but we just like the reason I did the club so much back then was the original four is I fired off that email. I got those avails. And like a lot of the people they were dealing with back then, because they were still kind of building the name of the room too. This is before like Passain did it and people like that. It's like, but he's like, everybody else just treated our club, our Friday, Saturday club that we're trying to run and actually making a club, like it was a shitty bar mic.
Yeah.
The way that they would email them. Yeah. And so that meant a lot that he said that to me, you know, and also made me feel very old because he was really emphasizing how long ago it was.
You started with kind of a sense of professionalism anyway.
Right, so I was older,
I don't think I ever.
Well, you were a college kid, and I was a 35-year-old man.
I was like, what them dates do?
It's like, you ready to sell out your club? Then I guess you're ready to have me. Because if you're not ready to sell out your club, don't book me. Don't book me if you're not ready to sell out that club. Are you ready to expand your club into the whatever retail space is next to it? Knock down a few walls and get some more seats? Because Dwight Simmons is here.
You're going to need it. Your impression of me is dead on.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It hurts.
Well, that was young
you. But it's accurate. That's young me.
That was young you.
That's young me. I watched Eddie Murphy Raw once, and I was like, yep, I'm doing that. They're like, you have 45 minutes? I was like, I start at 45 minutes.
Like, I don't even get going until 46. Minute 46 is when I get actual going. No, man. But yeah, so that's just another note on like the people who book this stuff, they do appreciate professionalism. That's just another way to bring it back to that for sure.
Yeah. And the second thing I want to talk about is just overall effort. I think a lot of us, you know, like Mary Santora was there and, you know, people at that level that are trying to book their own stuff and come up in the Midwest like we are, you kind of forget like... how much work you do throughout the year, but it's a reminder that like people do see it. And I think when, you know, we get so bogged down on like just a number thing, I think someone had a question they're half joking, but they're like, what's the number? How many followers do you want to, what am I shooting for here? Is it a moving target? And there are so many ways that they could have side-skirted it. And, but I thought Josh from Netflix did a fantastic job of saying like, because he has concrete examples of like, you know, he worked with Matt Rife. He worked with a couple of comics that have blown up, but it wasn't because of their social media numbers per se. Of course, you know, they already had a relationship. They got big, and of course that means you're going to get stuff, but that doesn't just mean because a comic has a huge following, that doesn't just mean they're going, they're next in line. Josh specifically was saying, you know, his job, his, he takes pride in finding the next person. If he was just a guy that just scrolled social media, why would he go sit at, you know, 8 showcases from Thursday to Saturday? Like, that's not what these people do. So definitely wants to see, you know, that you are trying, you are clipping your stuff up and that it's funny. And that, you know, Dan from 800 Pound Gorilla was like, I want to see that you have dates. I want to see that you're actually working. I want to see that you're growing. I want to see that effort, even if it's not translating into huge numbers. These people aren't necessarily dumb. They know that the internet's a game, it's fake, it's not real comedy, but they do want to see at least you try. So that was really helpful. It felt genuine as someone who doesn't have huge numbers that is trying. It's like, it's reassuring that, you know, at least if I meet this person, they happen to check out my Instagram, they can see that, okay, he's at least working and trying. And I think that's important.
I think this is, adds an extra element to something that we maybe don't talk about directly, but, you know, there is the thing where every comic does it. They post a little graphic. It's usually at the first day of the month. Here's all my shows this month. It's like a little flyer of all their shows this month. And we as comics love to kind of like shit on it, even though we do it. We kind of shit on other comics doing it sometimes, because there is this thing like, and I do it, I kind of switch mine up to like, this is just the shows this week.
Right.
So I'm not just counting on this one post at the beginning of the month. You know, it's more relevant. Like, here's the three shows I'm on this week and link in the, you know, my link tree. That shit matters, you know. Yes. You know, here's where the shitting on it part happens, is when you are a brand new baby comic or a couple of years in and all those things that you're listing are open mics.
Yeah.
And you're treated, particularly if you put the word tour on that motherfucker, like, this is your November tour. And it's just a bunch of open mics that you're doing, most of which are in the city that you live in.
It's the same
club. That shit is mockable. That shit, you are asking to be mocked by, your peers and the people who are farther along than you, right? And I understand, again, it falls into like the content creation monster. We got to put something up there. You got to put something up there. And this is all the shows that you have. That's fine, man. Yeah. But again, like, there is something about it's like, okay, you're asking people to come see you at all these open mics. That's not quite, it's kind of like what we talk about, like people that are trying to have merch when they're only hosting at shows or they're only doing open mics. You're kind of putting the cart before the horse a little bit there. But I mean, that is a type of flag that you are flying if you are a working comic.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, we talk about all the time. Like the nice thing about featuring is it's not on you to sell tickets, right? When you headline, it's on you to sell tickets.
100%.
But featuring is kind of nice. Like if nobody shows up, not your fault.
Yeah.
I'm just the feature. That was the headliner's fault. You know.
I mean, maybe try me out next year, dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're ready to sell out that club, you know.
I mean, knock down that strip mall. This could be us, but you playing.
You ready to get those stadium seats put in? All right. No. But I mean, there is the thing of other people are noticing it because it's true. Like when I have posted a bunch of stuff, like I'm doing these shows, it seems like I get more bookings.
Yeah.
Than if I am kind of radio silent on
you do
social media for a while, because you're also just your top of mind for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, oh, I had a fallout. Who? And then you are just refreshly in their feed posting that you're doing dates.
Yep.
Then they can be like, oh shit, you have this weekend open? You know, I see it's not on their little flyer thing.
Right.
So that's definitely big and it's worth doing it. And you know what? I know I'm a grumpy old man. If you are just open micing, do it anyway. Put your open mic dates on there.
No one
Maybe
cares.
Make it funny, you know, do it humbly or something. Yeah. Don't put the word tour on there, you know?
That sets Matt off if he sees the word tour on a poster and driving 23 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, all month. Yeah. Yeah, if you use a bus pass to do all your shows, you're not on tour. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah, do it anyway. Matt's just gonna mock you relentlessly.
Yeah, I mean, I need something to, you know, make fun of in a group chat with other comics. So please keep doing it, everybody. No, but I mean, I do have a very specific sort of mindset about tour. Like, I don't even call most of my stuff tours because I come from music touring, which is real touring.
Yeah,
like it's like you're gone for weeks at a time or months at a time. That's a tour. If you're back home every other day, to me, that's not a tour.
That's a comfy tour.
It's a comfy ass tour. And, you know, and you're a big headliner and you just, you know, you're flying out to clubs every weekend and you're calling that tour because it's the branding of it. I get it or whatever. Yeah. But just know that musicians know that shit ain't a tour, dog.
Yeah, they know. Don't leave out the poster.
Yeah.
They know tour.
You did mention Matt Rife. I did want to talk about him real quick. We haven't mentioned him in a while. I think that I sent you this link. I saw a clip of him being interviewed on The Tonight Show, and I found him to be like very humble, and like he was talking about how he has this two-man like show that he was doing with a friend got invited to JFL, but they didn't want him, they just wanted his friend.
Yeah.
And then he and then his friend stood up for him. He's like, well, I'm not doing the show without him. And JFL said, well, he can come, but he's got to pay his own way. Yeah. And he decided to swallow his pride and go do it. And while he's in Montreal having imposter syndrome, you know, which every comedian goes through, he decides, and he begrudgingly doesn't want to put another clip on social media because he's said, which I found very refreshing. He's like, I hate it. We all hate it. We don't like doing it. And he posted one while he was there. And that's the one that went crazy viral that then caused all of his other clips to go viral. And so it was this idea of just like, keep going, you know, which I was very inspired by. Between that and working with Brent this past weekend, who has the most work ethic and most hustle, like
it's
just
nuts.
Brent Terhune is always on that shit.
Yeah.
I went ahead and I pulled the trigger and I invested. I bought like a fancy camcorder that's going to shoot in 4K and the shotgun mic and all that stuff's coming actually this week. So I'm just going to try and do it. And I swallowed my pride and I posted a crowd work clip.
Yeah. Where's my goddamn applause button? I need drops on this podcast. We need drops.
We need the hypocrisy horn whenever. I mean, I spent 40. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what episode this is, 46, 47. I spent 40 plus episodes talking about how much we hate that and how much that's bad for comedy in general. But I mean, if that's the game, I got to do it. Now, am I only going to post crowd work clips? No, I'm going to go through and start clipping up jokes as well. Mm-hmm. But
come the caveats.
The start. Yeah. But I mean, no, I'm just saying, like, I'm going to try to temper it, but I am going to be posting crowd work clips. I'm not going to change what I do on stage to where I'm just trying to get those reels, though.
There's the difference.
I posted today, it's a dude chirped in the middle of a setup. And so then I was able to address it, flip it, turn it into like something funny. It wasn't me going now again, sound the hypocrisy horn again. One of the things I almost posted was from this past weekend where I did do a like, are y'all dating? How long you been together? I was doing very well-traveled crowd work. Some would say hacky. I just like to say I was on a very common path.
I was surviving the road.
I was trying to get this audience on my side, you know, like as they were a little tight. So I've invested into it and everything. And before I say too many nice things about Matt Rife, the algorithm, of course, because I watched that video and sent the link to a couple of comics like, yo, I think this is actually very insightful. And
it's over
inspiring.
For you.
No. Then it showed me a clip of his stand-up from the Netflix special, and I hated it. And it was like, it was one of those things where we know a comic who years ago figured this out. They had pretty misogynistic material. And then they decided to, and it didn't, they usually wouldn't do well. If they're women in the audience, they wouldn't do well. And all they did was simply repackage it to, ladies, I'm on your side.
Yes.
And then do the exact same joke about like, why do you all do this? I'm on your side. You know, you shouldn't be. And then all these jokes are still very derogatory towards women about how dumb they are, essentially. Yeah. And the things that they do are dumb. And
I'm on your side. I'm calling you dumb.
Yeah, exactly. No, you guys don't get it. I'm just showing this to you because I want to be a help, you know, is sort of the subtext of the way he packaged it. Yeah. And to his credit, it started working. Because it wasn't just blatantly a dude on bashing women on stage. It was now a dude under the guise of I'm on your side. I'm trying to help. And that's exactly what this Matt Rife bit was. It was exactly like, I love you ladies, but why? Da, 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 da. It's like, dude.
Yeah. It's the negging. It's the,
it's totally, the, negging. It's the game by
it's
Neil
the
Strauss.
Game.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And people like that. There's a reason we can shit on that, but there's a reason why it's, like people think it's fun. It's fun to get shat on. People are masochists. You can't deny this. So when people like, oh, he's talking shit about us, and he's fucking handsome, I think that means he wants to bang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming that's what I don't know, but there is. I guess you're right. You're getting to the true psychology of it, which is there is a large part of the population or audiences who do like it when you make fun of them. Right now there's some people that hate it, but I mean the whole Jeff Foxworthy thing, you might be a redneck, those when a bunch of left coast liberals eating that shit up and buying those albums.
Yes,
there were people in the audience going, shit, that's me, oh yeah, and loving it, right?
Yep. D.L. Hewley, when he'd be like, yep, it's that time of the show, and they're just about to make fun of everybody in the front row.
Yeah,
he'd say that and the audience would go nuts. They're like, we sat through 50 minutes of this is how poor people extend ketchup bits, and now he's finally about to talk about this guy's shirt.
Let's not bury the lead. So there's water. What are all the ways that poor people extend ketchup? You water it down.
You water it down, and then you gotta shake that bitch up. And then but you're trying to be like a scientist, so you don't want to add too much water. So you in there with like, yeah, it's a lot of act outs, Matt.
Okay. All
not
right.
Not great for an audio formatted podcast.
So that's a little wisdom that I did get from TikTok. So thank you, China, for that.
And congratulations on your crowd work clip. You know, Bruce Lee says be water.
If
you gotta stay flexible, you know, water becomes a pot if you put it into a pot, and we work for the algorithm if it makes us do crowd work clips. And I'll say it again. We say it every time. Do not go searching for these crowd work clips. Like, let it happen naturally because we can tell the difference.
Oh, and 100%.
Like, if you don't want someone to come to your Instagram profile to check you out and you're doing forced crowd work, you know, it's very important. So I'm actually going to go through my Instagram. I don't know when I started posting reels. It's not that many, but I'm going to take down some of the lower quality ones that were like shot in the back of a theater with my Samsung Galaxy 12.
Yeah.
So, and then just kind of replace them. But Yeah,
that's,
man.
That's obviously pretty smart. It's something that I think a lot of us could do as we upgrade our gear, particularly because if you have those ones and they're low performing, you might as well just drop them, get them off the profile. And so that's a good thing as well. We don't have a question of the week this week, but I did have something I thought of about last week's question, which I try to think of it in the moment. I don't know if you edited that out where I had the complete brain fart. Where I was like, what was my train of thought? What was I going to say?
Sir, you should know that I did not.
You ought to know.
You know that I did not. Innately.
Okay, good. So this is what I was trying to think of, everybody, last week. So the question from Shanda Sung, she had a multiple part question, but one of them was like, how do you respond to compliments without sounding insincere, you know, which is a very Midwest thing, obviously, where we're uncomfortable with that kind of stuff. A lot of us, you know, compliments. One of the things I wanted to say in that, though, is yes, try to be gracious and like, oh, thank you so much, everything. But do not, and I had to learn this the hard way, do not talk the audience member out of liking what they just saw. Like if you come off stage and you didn't think you had a great set, you thought you had a kind of a mediocre set or whatever. If you want to talk about that shit in the green room with the other comics, great. But people come up to your merch, I was like, oh, it was great. Don't be like, I was a little off my game. You know, like, I'm glad you had fun, but I could have been better. Do not do that shit. Mm-hmm. Do not do that shit.
Yeah.
Like I would do it sometimes. I would
it's
like
tough to turn it off immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Cause you're processing it still. And you just got off stage and you had to be over there with your little merch table, you know? And so I guess maybe this is being insincere, but you got to remember you're still on, you're still performing at the merch table.
Mm-hmm.
You're being charming. You're being gracious, you know, like you gotta save the self-doubt,
yeah.
The self-loathing until at least till you get in the green room or back to the hotel, you know, one of those. So yeah. That was just a note that I wanted to add to that is like, make sure you're not trying to convince the audience, like, you know what? You didn't have a good time. You are wrong. You should not buy this merch.
That's fantastic. I love that. That's great. I skirt around that by everyone that passes the merch table. I just look them in their eyes and say, you're welcome.
There you go.
Before they say anything, you're welcome. It's like,
you go, I know.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I know. Yeah. So one of the other things that we'll talk about our shows, because I would like to get a little bit more in depth to you gave us the overall view of what happened at Flyover Comedy Festival, but I'd like to hear about your individual shows and then kind of talk about my weekend as well. But I also want to follow up on something else that we talked about, not just last week, but I think the week before, about I wanted to let everybody know transparency on how my ad was doing. I've been running an ad for my shows this weekend in Louisville. I put $100 into this thing, and I did the technique that you had actually turned me on to, which is taking in an older, well-performing reel. I had a reel that did about 10K on it, and editing it. So I'm changing the text to the reel to be like, hey, Louisville, I'm coming this weekend, link in the ticket link, all that kind of stuff. And then boosting that reel again, right? So in the time since I have been running it, let's see here, sorry, let me pull this up. So it's been running for 6 days, and so far I've spent $63.24 of the $100. Impressions, just under 3,000. Initial plays, about the same. Profile visits, 6, which means they just clicked onto my actual Instagram profile to check out the rest of my shit. But the whole goal of the ad was to get them to click the link to buy tickets, to go to the ticket link. I have had 119 of those.
That's great. That's fucking great.
So
that's
awesome. Looking at about 50 cents per click is what I've been spending. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean everybody who clicked bought tickets.
Right.
Obviously.
But you can't see that.
You cannot see that, unfortunately, because I'm clicking to Planet of the Tapes ticket page, not to my own. Again, now, if this was a show that I was running or that I had that access, you know, if it was a Don't Tell Bloomington, I can see ticket sales for that, right? Because I have login for that. But overall, I feel like it's doing okay. I think going forward, I probably won't do the boosted reel thing as much as I will try to do a face fronting, like you've been doing a lot of promo where you're talking to the camera as you're walking a lot and like kind of like, hey, you know, make sure you check me out. How have those been doing for you? Have you been doing those as promoted ads, or have you been doing as organic sort of advertisement?
I haven't boosted one yet, so I don't know. Okay. And I probably won't. I probably will for my shows in December. I'm kind of conflicted because those are on the week before Christmas, so they're They are the week of Christmas, actually, the 22nd, 23rd. So I'm not sure.
Rough. Where are those shows at? Like, so
Nate and Funny Bone.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know if that would be the best indicator of are the best way to spend money anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do something just so I'm not going to mail it in, but I'm probably not going to spend a full $100 mm-hmm. on a probably low performing weekend anyway. Mm-hmm. But I haven't boosted one of those just because I want them to feel like a little natural.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you see, at least on TikTok, when you see like promoted
right
underneath, it kind of takes away from that. But I was, I did see a couple of people like splice up part of a well-working clip and part of like, hey, I will be here.
Right.
And I think that's really something that I could do, get into next year. Like just mm-hmm. sit down and bust out a bunch of, hey, I'll be here, just like in one, and then edit them out to have them come out.
Yeah.
Instead of relying on text, which is the traditional ad, which is like, hey, I will be here, blah, 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 blah,
because,
blah.
Yeah, because they may not even look at that part because they, you know, how often when you see a video on Instagram or TikTok, how often are you actually looking at the text part of because very, very few times, I think, me personally.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I would even, and on TikTok, it hides almost all of it. It's like mm-hmm. real scrunched up. So
it does.
Yeah, I think that sort of edited thing is definitely the way to do it. But again, then we're talking about like, you're talking about more time investment, which, you know, mm-hmm. is just part of it, you know, like,
That's why. So I got into this habit, I think, of just like, all right, I'm gonna record like 3 or 4 videos in a row mm-hmm. while I have like this hour. Like mm-hmm. I did a couple in St. Louis this weekend. I did like 2 in the hotel room, and then I did like 2 while I was out walking.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's like, all right, I've got this hour. I'm going to sit down, even though I'm not going to edit these right away. At least I'll have them.
Right.
To kind of like, you know, treat it the same way that I'm going to treat sitting down to send bookings. If I can just batch this out instead of like trying to do it when I think about it, I think it's way better. But it also, like you said, it's just another thing you have to manage. But
it's another thing you have to manage. I do think the batching it out is the way to do it. And when I had, you know, had done the initial push on putting up clips that I'm getting ready to do again when I get my new camera and start really trying to, you know, do another push, I would sit there and just go through a set, like clipping up joke, 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 joke. And I would spend an hour or two, you know, a couple days over the course of a couple days doing that, because after a couple hours, I don't want to listen to myself and do all that stuff, but I would just bank them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think any type of batching like that is definitely the way to do it, as opposed to like every day you're going to have to go through and find a new joke and then clip, you know, like that kind of stuff is just not as efficient for sure. I will tell you real quickly about my weekend, and then we'll get back into your experience at Flyover Comedy Festival. But before we do often have questions of the week on this podcast, and we would love to hear one from you, good listener. You can email us at mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight at gmail.com. Any questions you have about comedy, about us, about I don't know what Matt Rife. I don't know. We'll make up some questions about Matt Rife. Yeah.
Music, musicians, any reference. I don't know.
What actually constitutes a tour and what does not.
Matt, you want to take this one?
Yeah. If I ain't on it, it ain't a tour. That's what I'm saying. All right. You just out there playing. You're just playing around.
My man said, if you use your bus pass, you're not a real comic. And
I, that's, you know, not what I said. I did not say you're not a real comic. I said you're not on tour. I said if you could go to all the shows using your city bus pass of where you live, that ain't a tour. I will stand by that statement for sure.
I love it so much. I love it.
But so my weekend was pretty good. Let me go back so I can remember what it actually was.
You were you put in some miles this weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, so I had a pretty jam-packed into one day on Saturday of this past week. Brent Terhune and I did a private corporate event at like 4 in the afternoon in Milwaukee. And then later that night, we were at the Comedy Cabin in Janesville, Wisconsin, co-headlining for their late show. This corporate corporate event was great, man. It was probably the best corporate event I've ever done. I think Brent had the similar experience. They were just very laid back. It was for a law office, downtown Milwaukee, super swanky high rise.
Nice.
You know, Brent had negotiated a pay and told them that he was bringing me and that he was just going to pay me out of his, you know, agreed cut. But pretty much as soon as we got here, the main guy just pulled out his wallet and handed me three $100 bills.
This motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. Very nice guy. Like that guy a lot. His name is Pete. Good dude.
I'm a fan of that guy.
He was a good dude.
Pulling out hundreds.
And they had, like, you know, some food that they let us eat, you know, stuff. And they put us up in the swankiest hotel, which is one of those things where it's almost a problem, though, because, you know, that luckily they covered the parking too, but a lot of times when the club puts you in a really nice hotel, now you got a $40 a day parking thing.
Yeah. Downtown Milwaukee is brutal.
Yeah. But I mean, they covered the parking as well, which was great, It was like, we looked it up and it was like a $350 a night hotel.
Woo-wee.
Yeah. And we shared a room. We didn't each get our own rooms, you know, but it's one of those things too. It's like, you know, no free breakfast. Luckily, they covered the parking, you know, but it was a great experience. But we kind of used that as the base of operations. And then we, after the corporate event, we went and did the Comedy Cabin, which I'd heard good things about. It's a new room, but I'd already heard a lot of good things about it, and lives up to it, man. It's a weird building when you get there. It's like a old school 80s, like office park type building with like, there's like a chiropractor's office in there and a, you know, a dentist and a doctor's, all this kind of stuff. And then randomly a comedy club.
Wow.
And they have basically the basement to the entire building is the comedy club.
Okay.
And so
as it should be,
Yeah. Hide them down there, but low ceilings, great setup. Very cool. Like, unfortunately the owner couldn't be there, but you know, this is the thing that where Brent and I split a Facebook ad, Instagram ad. We dropped $100 on this to promote the show. I know earlier in the day when we had texted the club owner, we had 58 tickets sold. The room holds about 100, maybe 120 if you really jammed them in there, you know.
Yeah.
And I know we had more than that. Probably 70 to 80 people.
Oh, great.
There for our show. And they had had an early sort of showcase type show with a bunch of comics from Chicago. And then we were the late show. And it was great, man. They were like, people were there to party, have fun. Definitely some of Brent's fans were there, but there were also a bunch of like randos who had no idea who either one of us were. So we're thinking it's probably the Facebook ad, along with the club's own marketing. They did actually, they're a new club and they're on it. You know,
I love
to see it. Very good on their social media about marketing stuff. And so it was a great experience, man. But we definitely had a couple of people were, it was so weird. They were a little chirpy. They were super drunk. It was a brother and a sister, probably in their 40s or so. And they were there with their dad and like kind of a big crew. Mm-hmm. But the brother and sister in particular were really intoxicated. And like both of them, when I'm in the back of the room watching Brent, they come up to me and they're like, luckily not talking super loud, but a little like, just, oh my God, that was so great. And I'm like, okay, cool. We'll talk after the show.
Yeah.
And then they came up and bought merch for me and Brent, but they were like, literally like hanging on me, the dude and his girlfriend, like just hugging on me, and like to where I had to put my hand like on the dude's chest to kind of push him away, because it was just right in my face talking.
Oy.
And the show's over at this point. It's not like we're trying to whisper, they're just so like intense, which was what was crazy is they weren't really distractions during the show. Like they each kind of chirped one time. Basically, like her, because I asked about, is anybody here into crystals? And of course she was. And then he, I forget what he said, but they were pretty good at, during the show.
Yeah.
But man, like the invasion of body space was, I can't remember the last time I've had it like that. It was just kind of like, you have to fucking step off me, dude. Like,
damn,
was, dude, trying to be nice, you know,
being married to a woman from Wisconsin, I can tell you, you're part of that thruple now. You belong to them.
That brother sister thruple.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, it's weird in Janesville. I don't. You got outside of Milwaukee, and things get a little dicey.
They get a little weird out there. Yeah,
they get a little weird. Yeah, I don't. That was part of the question that Shanda asked last week. It's like, how do you deal with this without being an asshole?
Yeah,
it's like, yo, you are super super close.
Yeah, super, I just and, you know, and of course the whole time I'm thinking I haven't had my flu shot yet and my COVID booster, and this dude's like, I'm definitely breathing his air. She was a not quite as bad as him, but she was still like a little too close for kind of, you're like, yo, you need to just a little bit, like give me a little bit of, but other than that, it was absolutely great. Fantastic. I highly recommend the Comedy Cabin.
That's awesome.
They're doing some cool shit there for sure. What about you, Dwight? Take us through your shows. You had 5 shows while you were there?
Is that correct? Yeah. Yeah. First of all, congratulations on doubling up. Always do that if you can. Mm-hmm. Very smart stuff. I had 5 shows. I got to open for Shang Wang. Mm-hmm. That was a short set, but about 300 people. And ever since his Netflix special came out, I kind of knew the lore of the super fan that mm-hmm. he has created for himself, but it was legit. Like, these people, as soon as he walked on stage, it was like watching Chris Rock at the beginning of Bigger and Blacker, where everyone's just clapping for fucking long. They're so happy that he's there. And he's so chill. He's like, whatever. But that show was hot. That was the hottest show of the weekend. Peaked early, baby. it was my first show. Everyone killed. Everyone crushed because the crowd was awesome. And then, let's see. I did 2 variety shows. I did a storytelling show that I've done before called Sorry, Please Continue, mm-hmm. where they interrupt you during a story. That was at the Improv Shop. Mm-hmm. Which I had never been to before. They have a main room and a side room, and the whole front of the, like, I guess the whole front of the venue where you walk in is a bar / mm-hmm. like hangout area. Like, they have arcade games, and that's where the industry thing was. That's where the after parties were. That was like the main space for the comics mm-hmm. to hang out. Because there was also like this really dope patio attached to it. You could mm-hmm. tell it was made by comics. Like, it's the rooms are very nice, but it's like very easy to move around. Mm-hmm. So I had a show in each of those rooms, the small room and the large room, that were very fun. I did another variety show that was probably the most fun I had all weekend, which was, is so they have a deck of cards, and every card is associated with something. Some challenge that you have to do. So you start out doing your set. Mm-hmm. If you get like a ace, that means you have to do like a very old joke. If you get a 2, you have to do a new joke. If you get a 3, you have to do your joke, and like the audience gets to yell out a celebrity comic that you have to impersonate while telling your joke.
Mm-hmm.
That was super fun. Like, they pulled out the cards. Yeah. Like, so they had these giant cards. I get there, and it was the late show on Friday, and they're going over the rules, and I was like, why the fuck did I say yes to this? Because they did ask me. It wasn't like some festivals where they're just like, hey, you're doing this. You're doing this.
Right, wasn't an assigned thing. It's just extra shows that you signed up for. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, sure. And then, like, I was like, why the fuck did I do this? I just had a really fun set, and now mm-hmm. got to do this shit. So the show starts. The crowd is like super into it. I think what makes it is the comics on the show were so good and funny. And just, I think mm-hmm. anytime you have a show like this, you have to have comics that really lean into the concept. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you know of Gabby Watts. I think she's from Atlanta. Super mm-hmm. funny. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I think the first card I got was tell one of your oldest jokes. And just went into it. It's just like, I don't think Obama is going to get elected. I've been doing this a long time, everybody. So, yeah, that just, and that was, you know, not a heavily attended show, but a lot of comics were there to hang out. And it was a good vibe. My last set of the weekend was just very light. At the industry brunch, a lot of people were like, hey, what do you want to see specifically if you go to watch one of these showcases? Like, what are you looking for? Do you mm-hmm. want people to kill if you see them twice? Do you want different material? Like, what do you want? And one of the comments was, no matter what's happening in the room, I just want to see a comic that's confident, that sort of doesn't give a fuck, and like leaves the mark. So I changed my set because 2 industry people walked in. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't notice, but there were like 14 audience members. There were not that many people there.
Yeah.
And I went right before the headliner and just did the Good Bones bit, mm-hmm. Which is right about 7 minutes. I cut it short so I could do the Black history bit as well, because I think that really showcases some uniqueness within my set. But it was like, it felt so forced because 7 minutes comes so fast.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, typically in a longer set, I would just ease my way into this bit, make sure people like me before trying to close on this insane thing. And I think it went okay, but it wasn't like a big, you know, I was just like, that was the closer. I got to get off stage now.
Yeah.
You know, because that joke sometimes gets an applause break. And most of the time people are like, that was a fantastic point that we laughed at in the middle.
Right.
And we like the end of that joke flies over a lot of people's head, especially if they're younger. They don't know what Fraggle Rock is, which is how that joke ends, which is that crowd was a little younger. So that was a little disappointing, but I didn't it wasn't like a bomb. It was just like, you know, you got industry in the room. You want to fucking let them have
stand
it
out and
bit.
Do something different. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And it's also hard to do in those sort of scenarios. Like you did two jokes that were big, like it's high stakes with that. I remember when I did Laughing Skull, and that was still when it was still a competition and they had industry people. One of the notes that I got is during my first sort of industry showcase show, I did a single 5 minute story.
Yeah.
I did like one thing and it was well proven and good and it had laughs throughout, you know, it's like but that was one of the notes I got the next day at like the sort of the brunch thing. Like they were like, yeah, it was good, but we just didn't know what else you had.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, it's hard with those then. You know,
sets,
like, what do you want me to do? You want me to do like a bunch of one-liners? I mean, you know,
it's not who I am, right?
Yeah. So it's a little awkward, but I'm glad that you got to do it, man. It sounds like you had a hell of a good time and, you know, got a lot out of it too, you know?
Yeah. It's nice just because I do feel like the industry was there to watch people and, you know, sometimes festivals promote, oh, we're going to have industry, and they just, you know, go to the bar and hang out by themselves or with other industry instead of actually doing the work to go to showcases. So I had two fun, really good straight sets. I had some fun on the variety shows, and then I had an okay set. So I worked it. I got to go to the zoo. Man, it was great, great fucking weekend. Did you know the St. Louis Zoo is free?
Wow, I did not know that.
I didn't either.
That's
it's
good
pretty,
to know.
It's pretty dope, but
there you go.
I think we are done with, I say we and the WE, the royal me. I think I'm done with at least the next year submitting to festivals. I think I fested out. I've got one in Atlanta in February, but I think I'll take what I've hopefully achieve from this festival season and then try to turn it into more road work or other opportunities. So that'll be the focus.
I think it's smart to do that. And I, you know, I did not do a lot of festivals this year. Is that true? I did Alaska. I did a couple things, I guess, this year. But I think I'm the same way. I'm not going to submit, which I mean, a bunch of them are already taking submissions. And if I get like an amazing 5 minute clip or 5 to 10 minutes, I might just like, why not, you know? I would love to do Flyover. I think it was an alternate maybe the first year, but I never got in. There's definitely one, there's a few that I still like to, you know, check off my list. But when you do a bunch of them in a single year, it's a lot. And you know, yes, you can write off the expense of it, but those are all weekends that you could have been working and making money, which is a big consideration when it's your job, like it is for us, you know. It's people that, you know, are still have a regular day job and they can go do these festivals. It's great because, you know, they didn't get to do any paid comedy shows, but they still have this other thing to fall back onto that's paying all their bills. And we just don't have that luxury, you know,
to
block out all those.
I do want to say, like, I know I just made that comment of like industry doesn't watch, but like, if you're in the middle of the country and you're trying to do this, it is very important for you to do festivals, or at least that needs to be on your radar or a goal of yours. They're fucking really hard to get into. Like, you're going to take a lot of no's. It's frustrating. But if you're not planning on moving to the coast, it's a great way to just like meet these people, even if they don't see your set. Like, you get a weekend of opportunity to get some FaceTime and I think it's really important, just if not completely advantageous to your comedy career, to meet people at that level and people from other cities that book shows. So,
100%. Yeah, definitely. And then also, in that, you know, just as from a personal experience, you know, when I did do that Laughing Skull Festival, I don't even know if he did see one of my sets, but I got the booker for the Tonight Show's email. Mm-hmm. I was able to submit to the Tonight Show for several years in a row. Like, and he was very kind about it and like sent me back. And I would not have gotten that FaceTime. Like, I met him, he saw me on stage, you know, who knew who he was. So when I emailed him, you know, that first email, I was like, hey, we met at Laughing Skull, here's my submission tape, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, it's definitely, it's the value in it. It's worth missing a few paid weekends, I guess, is a good way to look at it, for sure, if it's going to have that ending to it. So where are you going to be this week? Let's get our plugs in, and then we'll wrap this puppy up.
Yes, sir. All right. We're back to trying to make a little bit of money here. November 15th, the day this comes out. If you hear it, come to the White Rabbit Cabaret. If you're in Indianapolis doing a little showcase there, should be fun. And then the 17th and 18th, Friday and Saturday, I will be doing four shows at the world famous Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana. I'm having a great Indiana week this week. I'm very excited. Come to those shows. They're always more fun when people are in the seats. What about you, Matt? Where are you going to be at?
On the day that this comes out, on Wednesday the 15th, I'll be hosting Don't Tell Comedy in Bloomington, Indiana. We've got a really great headliner coming in. We're catching them on tour. They're a West-based headliner that's routing through, and we're able to snag them for that. It's going to be really good. That show is almost sold out. Before we started recording this, we only had two tickets left for that. Damn. So it's going to be a banger.
Hell yeah.
And we're in a brand new location this time, which is cool too. And then this Friday and Saturday, the 17th and 18th, I'll be in Louisville, Kentucky at the Planet of the Tapes. Be great if we could pack those out. That'd be awesome. So if you're listening to this and you want to buy tickets to those shows, the link is on my website, which is madelanomartincomedy.com. Every one of those words has a hyphen in between it besides comedy and com, in which there is a dot. It's always also easier just to Google my name. If you just Google my name, my website, I think, is usually the first thing that pops up. You can also get those tickets through the Planet of the Tapes website as well, if that's easier for you. Dwight, do we have any words of wisdom? Oh, I did have one thing I wanted to say. I'm going to squeeze this in at the end, and this is a good thing for the ending. Nice. Bought this new camera, right? It's coming. Yeah. I'm making the investments and stuff. And I'm thinking about trying to shoot two back-to-back, like 30-minute specials, like a clean one, mm-hmm. where I'm just doing like PG-rated jokes, and then a dirty one, mm-hmm. where I do all the exact same jokes, but my dick's out the entire time.
Ooh, la, la.
And that's the dirty special. What do you think about this idea? Is this a solid plan?
What do you think
the industry panel would have said about this idea?
I did see OnlyFans is producing comedy
I know.
So there is, like, it's not without a market.
Okay, good.
You can be on, what's the Clean Serious channel?
Yeah, it's that, because they can't hear the dick.
Can't hear the dick. It's like, it's the same jokes. But okay, well, bye.
Goodbye. Like, rate, and review. Tell people about the podcast. Thank you. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Please put it away.